නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So we have undertaken Sammadhitti Sutta to discuss, and we already conducted one session on this topic. And as you all know, this is the ninth sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. And one reason to discuss this is that we already have discussed Brahmajala Sutta, where we have discussed about 62 wrong views. Buddha has explained them in detail in the Brahmajala Sutta, and we tried our best to explain them as much as possible. And while we were going through that, sometimes we get the question, so all these different views are coming under the wrong views, then what is the right view that Buddha is preaching? So in order to explain that, so that's why we have taken the Sammadhitti Sutta, where a comprehensive explanation is given on Sammadhitti, and I am using several other suttas also to support this Sammadhitti. And we first learn what Venerable Sariputta has to tell about Sammadhitti. So basically, one occasion Buddha was residing at Anathapindika's dwelling place, that is the Jethavanarama, and at that time Venerable Sariputta addressed the monk asking whether they are ready to hear some information, some dhamma related to Sammadhitti. And basically then the other monks were delighted, and they really want to inquire that from Venerable Sariputta. They really want to explain that from Sariputta. So then Venerable Sariputta start going on this topic. So the first, actually, he explained the wholesome and the unwholesome. Akusalancha pajanati, akusala mulancha, kusalancha pajanati, kusala mulancha. So the wholesome and, sorry, the unwholesome and then the unwholesome roots, then the wholesome and the wholesome roots. So these are what basically he started with. So we can see a kind of a ground preparation is done. So that is also coming under the Sammadhitti. So we can't ignore this side. So basically, first of all, we should know what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. What are the exact reasons or causes, roots of what is causing one to conduct an unwholesome task or to conduct a wholesome task. So under this, we discussed unwholesome task. We can divide into three categories. Those are conducted by the body, conducted by speech, and then the mind. So there are, these things are quite well known all to all of us. So killing, stealing, and then sexual misconduct. So that comes under the body related misconduct. And then false speech, malicious speech, harsh speech, and gossip comes under the four verbal misconduct. And then covetousness, ill will, and wrong view coming as the three unwholesome mental conduct. Altogether, there are 10 unwholesome tasks, unwholesome deeds, and explained by Venerable Sariputta, and these things are commonly known Dasa Akusal, the 10 types of wrong deeds. Now the cause to conduct these wrong deeds are called as the roots of unwholesome side. So they are the greed, hatred, and delusion, lobha, dosa, moha. Then we discuss the opposite side, that is the wholesome side. So the complete abstention of all that 10 wrong deeds coming as the 10 wholesome deeds. That means abstaining from killing, abstaining from stealing, abstaining from sexual misconduct are explained as the wholesome bodily conduct. And similarly, we can understand the wholesome mental conduct and wholesome verbal conduct. And the roots for conducting in that path, the wholesome side, is explained as the non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, aloba, adosa, amoha. Now we can see, he further explained the wholesome and the If someone is able to well understand this unwholesome and the root of the unwholesome, the wholesome and the root of the unwholesome, he say he entirely abandons the underlying tendency to lust. That means raga anusayam pahaya. So he can able to abandon the underlying tendency to lust. Patiga anusayam pativinodetta. He abolishes the underlying tendency to aversion. Asmiti ditti mana anusayam samuhanitva. He extirpates the underlying tendency to the view and conceit I am. Avijjam pahaya vijjam upadetva. And he is able to abandon ignorance and arouse the true knowledge. Ditteva dhamme dukkhasanta karo hoti. He here itself is able to overcome suffering. So within this life, it is not in the future, but in this very life. So therefore, this samadhi is a kind of a crucial factor, as we discussed even last week. So that is actually becomes the leading factor of all other path factors. So we discussed that in the Mahachattarisika Sutta, where Buddha explains how Eightfold Noble Path is actually working, and it may even develop to Tenfold Path to the Arahants, to the fully enlightened beings. There we discussed how Samadhitti, the right view, is actually giving a kind of a guidance to all other path factors. And then we can discuss today's topic. After discussing this wholesome and the unwholesome side, so then, Venerable Sariputta himself after explaining it, then the other monks, but friend, might there be another way in which noble disciple is one of right view? So they are asking, is there any other way that one can define, okay, you are in the, you have arrived the right view, are you with the right view? Not only this, but is there any other, another way of explaining it, another perspective? And then actually these Venerable Sariputta say yes. So this is not the only samadhitti. So then he is taking provision to explain some other way of samadhitti. So there he is going to explain about the ahara, the four nutriments. Siya auso, yathoko auso ariya savako aharancha pajanati, ahara samujayancha pajanati, and then ahara nirodhancha pajanati, ahara nirodha gamani patipadanta pajanati. So basically, one needs to know about the nutriments, their origin, their cessation, and the way leading to the cessation of nutriments. Now, according to the Buddha's teaching, there are four nutriments. And so we already, I think, discussed some time back. Anyway, we'll discuss this today also. And what is nutriment? What is the origin of nutriment? What is the cessation of nutriment? And what is the way leading to the cessation of nutriment? Now, Venerable Sariputta is explaining. There are altogether four categories or four kinds of nutriments which are helpful to maintain the body of someone who has already born and to the support who are about to be born. And what are they? Kablinkara ahara, passa ahara, mano sanchetana ahara, vinyana ahara. Kablinkara ahara, the physical food as a nutriment. And then which can be actually gross or subtle. And then the contact, the passa ahara. Then the mental volition, mano sanchetana ahara. And then the consciousness, that is the vinyana ahara. Now, when we say like this, may not be clear very much. So let's try to get into more detail about these four nutriments. Kabalinkara ahara, the physical food, which is actually a good place to start with, because we all can understand that, because we already all every day we take food, we are taking our breakfast, then the lunch, then dinner and all that, and time to time we sometimes take certain other drinks. So this may be some gross food or some subtle food, So anyway, they are all coming under this new physical food that we all can understand. All human beings, all the people, all the beings here on earth are dependent on this food. And even the gods, celestial beings, are dependent on food. It may be very subtle, but still they are dependent on food. So sabbe satta aharattitika. So all these living beings are dependent on food. So this is a kind of a fact that we all understand. And that food could be either gross or could be subtle, could be very refined. Now, how one needs to look at it? And here Venerable Sariputta is giving further explanation about what is the cause of these nutriments. So he is explaining the cause is actually this craving, tanha. Tanha is the reason for these nutriments to arise. And if one is able to overcome tanha, cease tanha, abandon tanha, then the cessation of nutriment can happen. So what is the path leading to the cessation of nutriment is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. So this is something that we need to keep in our mind. Now let's see more detail about these nutriments using some other supporting suttas. So there's a very well-known sutta called Putta Mansupama Sutta, which is available in the Sanyutta Nikaya, Nidana Sanyutta. It's talking about all four nutriments with some detailed explanation, including some attractive similes. So these attractive similes are very, very powerful, and Buddha takes time to explain that. So this sutta, the Putta Mansupama Sutta, is directly from the Buddha. He is the one explaining those four nutriments. Now here in the Sammaditta Sutta, Venerable Sariputta is the one explaining, but here in the Putta Mansupama Sutta, four nutriments are explained by the Buddha himself. Now, how the nutriment edible food to be seen? So Buddha not only explaining the nutriment edible food, but he wants us to understand that from a different angle. For that, he is giving a kind of a simile. Now in this simile, which is a very powerful simile, he's saying that there are two mother and father, that's a two, the parents, and they only have one son, and anyway they have to go through a desert. It's a large desert, and while they are in the middle, they ran out of food. Now they can't return back, and at the same time they can't return back, and still they can't go to the other side also, because they are entirely in the middle. Now there are a few options available. One thing is they all may have to try to go through, but since there is no food, they all three may die. Now there's another option that is actually it's a kind of bitter decision, a strong decision. That decision is to kill their son and eat that flesh. Using that flesh, now they are trying to cross to the other shore or cross to the end of the desert. Now their mother and the father has taken that decision. They have killed their only son. And then while eating the son's flesh, now they are going to the other side. Now interestingly, while eating, so they are crying, where is my son, where is my beloved son, where is our only son? So they are, while crying, while beating their breast, they are eating, but no option, they are using that and crossing to the other side. Now after explaining this strong simile, now Buddha is asking, what do you think, bhikkhus, would they eat that food for amusement or for enjoyment or for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness? No, Venerable Sir. Wouldn't they eat that food only for the sake of crossing the desert? Yes, Venerable Sir. It is such a way, because that I say the nutriment edible food should be seen. Now, so this perspective is very important because we see that typically people are enjoying the food. So they have different parties, different occasions, different festivals, and they even name it as food festivals. Anyway, different usage of food is there, and so basically they are using food for many different reasons. Maybe to enjoy, maybe for kind of a play, maybe to beautify themselves, maybe to sort of strengthen their muscles so that they can participate in a certain event. So likewise, many reasons are there, and particularly they are using food for enjoyment. So they may gather together and they are throwing a party, and then they enjoy food, eating food. And they are even teasing using the food. So likewise, different usage is there. But here for the meditators, for the people who are more inclined towards some spiritual path, then Buddha say you better look at food from a different angle. So that is like this. So you are eating just for the mere sustaining of the body, because this body requires food. It is dependent on food. So you need to maintain the food, maintain the body, so that every day you may have to take food. So make use of food with the proper reason, with the proper cause, with the proper attitude. So therefore Buddha is asking monastics actually to reflect when they are taking food. When they are receiving food, they are while they are having food, after having food. So they have to go through a reflection. Parisankhaya yoniso pindapatam patisevami neva davaya na madaya na mandanaya na vibhusanaya yava deva imassa kaya satithiya yapanaya vihinsu paratiya brahmacharya anugrahaya. So likewise, there's a reflection explained by the Buddha. So Buddha say, when you are able to do such a reflection, then certain unnecessary defilements may not arise because of partaking food. Now, say for example, if you are having a delicious food, but the others don't have it, probably you might be conceited, you might be proud, comparing your situation with someone else's situation, thinking you are quite gifted, you are very fortunate, you are the, you know, the superior, but others are unfortunate, less gifted. So you can compare and put yourself up and developing some amount of conceit. The other side is also possible. When you don't have enough food while others are having, probably you may be jealous about it, may be angry about it, you might want to steal it. So likewise, different wrong, say, defilements might arise in the mind. On the other hand, say if this food is delicious, probably the greed can arise in one's mind. But if we eat it with proper reflection, knowing what is the exact reason why we are taking food and what is the purpose, and I am merely using it to maintain this body, to continue my practice, to sustain this body. So the main reason is known, and accordingly we take the food. So then we are in a good shape. Now, here Buddha gives another information. When the nutriment edible food is fully understood, lust for the five chords of sensual pleasure is fully understood. Because we know that when we are taking food, so even to see that arrangement we may really love. So that's why people not merely taking food, they are preparing the table, they put different adornments, different techniques. So all different kinds of things are there, even for the, you know, table arrangements. So that view is very beautiful, attractive. And the smell is also there. I don't know, sometimes sounds also they may prepare. So anyway, so all that smell, taste, touch, all that is fairly involved in this occasion. So if one is able to thoroughly understand the edible food, Buddha say you may be able to understand lust for five chords of sensual pleasure. Panchakama guna. Panchakama, actually. The sensual desire one has for sight, sound, smells and taste. Tangibles. Now, if one is able to understand that thoroughly, how the lust or greed or desire arising to the sight, how lust, greed arising towards sounds, smells, taste, tangibles, then Buddha say, okay, you are thoroughly continuing that understanding, knowing its true nature, how it is arising and passing away. So you are in a way in a meditative mood, you are using that occasion for your spiritual development, and the interesting result is that you may be able to completely abandon sensual desire, and basically you one may become an unwritten anagami, no fetter bound by which a noble disciple might come back again to this world. So that means complete abandonment of the desire, kama raga, is possible. So we can see even it is the physical food, so Buddha has taken us or directed us to a very higher goal. It's not an easy thing, but this is the kind of a direction that Buddha has given with respect to edible food. Now this is actually easy to understand. We all are taking food, so we all can easily understand edible food as a nutriment. But there's another form, three other forms Buddha explained the nutriments. So the other one is actually with respect to our senses, which is called the passa ahara, the contact, nutriment contact. So we all like to use our eyes to see forms, sights. We all like to use our ears to hear sounds, use our nose to recognize various odors, our tongue to recognize various tastes, our body to recognize various tangibles, touch sensations, and to use the mind to know various mental objects. So we are interacting with the outside world using our six senses, and it is constantly in operation. We can't keep them somewhat restrained, and if someone is asking, okay, don't exhaust them, don't misuse them, then we might even get angry because we consider that these healthy faculties are there for my enjoyment. So that's why people are going after that. They are preparing as much as possible beautiful sights. They are compiling very beautiful music. They are going for various fragrances. They are preparing delicious food and going after some, say, soft or kind of delightful sensations. And if none of them are available, maybe they start thinking. Conceptual proliferation. So even that they are using for enjoyment. Fantasizing, daydreaming, all that is there. So basically these six senses we are trying to gratify as much as possible. So it's another way of taking food. So we can't keep our eyes closed. We want to see beautiful things. As much as possible, we want to hear music. Now, in the good old days, they have to go to a particular place to listen to music. But now, thanks to the technology, even while traveling, they can hear music. So all that has become kind of the norm of our life. So sensual gratification is something that every government is in a way promising as much as possible how to gratify our senses. So this gratification is something that we are going after. But on the other hand, Buddha is telling us another story, another side. So these six senses are always vulnerable. We can't say that even though we want to gratify, we want to see only the good side, we can't say we will go through only the good side. There may be the other bad, bitter side as well. Even though we like to see beautiful sights, there are sometimes we have to see very unpleasant sights. Even though we like to hear good news, maybe music or something, but still we have to hear completely unpleasant, horrible things. So likewise, the opposite side is also there. The suffering side is also there. So in a way, having these senses is as a kind of a vulnerable situation. We become vulnerable to the outside exposure. Now this is explained by the simile Buddha giving here, he's saying, suppose there is a flayed cow, so the skin is taken out, but it is not dyed yet. So what it does is, it's going closer to a wall, but there are creatures in the wall and they all come down and start eating this cow, the flayed cow. Then suppose in order to escape from that, it is going to a tree, closer to a tree, and there are creatures, insects, etc. In that tree, they all quickly run down and they start eating, biting this flayed cow. Then Buddha say, okay, in order to escape from that, assume that this cow quickly go running to the river, kind of reservoir, to some water. But there are also fish and all turtles and etc. are there. They quickly come and start biting it. And now in order to escape, suppose it's going to an open space, kind of a garden, kind of a playground or something like that, open air. Now there are birds and all which are residing using the sky, so they all figure out and they all quickly come down and they start biting this flayed cow, because flayed cow is completely exposed to the situation. So likewise Buddha say, it is such a way because that I say the nutriment contact should be seen. Now this is a different way of looking at our senses. Even though we have healthy senses, they are quite exposed to the situation. We have to go through it. We sometimes have to bear the thing. Suppose you are getting into a bus or someone else's vehicle and he is playing some unpleasant music which you don't like to hear. Sometimes you don't have the capacity to stop it. You have to bear it. So you are going through a situation, there are certain unpleasant incidents are happening. You still have to see it, even though you don't like it or you don't even approve it. And there are occasions that we smell bad odors and the taste may not be good, and maybe the exposure to some other, say, terrible conditions, maybe weather conditions, may be difficult to bear. So the sense, the tangible side is also there. And the thoughts are always tormenting the mind, and that you all know when we start meditating, so we can see how much thoughts are sort of disturbing us. So likewise, we can see these senses, even though they are quite useful, the opposite side is also there. And if we are misusing them, the danger is also there. So if we are able to looking at the senses like this, so Buddha say the feeling is possible to understand, because the contact causes feeling. Passapaccaya vedana. So that's the next link in the Parisamuppada. So the contact causes feeling. So whenever our senses are operating, contact happens. And that contact causes a type of feeling. The feeling is entirely dependent on the type of contact. So if there is a pleasant feeling, that means there's a conducive contact has happened. If there's an unpleasant feeling, a such contact has happened. If there's a neutral feeling, a such conducive contact has happened. So the contact is the deciding factor. So that contact, when we are understanding more thoroughly, so the feelings are also very well known. So therefore, if one is able to understand feelings, their operation, they are arising, changing, passing away, all that, so then basically Buddha said there is nothing else to do, you become even an arahant. So it's so powerful. So knowing the contact fully and knowing its product, that is the feeling, in all its aspects, basically abandons the craving, abandons the whole fetters, and one can even become an arahant. So basically there are certain meditations related to the senses which we discuss in the Satipatthana Sutta under the Dhammanupassana called Ayatana Bhavana, Ayatana Pabba. So they are You're keeping your attention at each and every sense and how it is operating with the external stimuli. And there you can understand the contact, the feeling, if there are any defilements arising as a result of that contact, that also one can understand. So that kind of ayatana bhavana is also possible. Sometimes people like to do that and they give more emphasis to that. So they are keeping like a gatekeeper to each and every sense door, and trying to see how they are operating, how the reaction happens. Are there any defilements due to that sense contact? That's another meditation technique one can be aware of, one can use of. And interesting thing is, there also you can understand how contact is appearing and then disappearing, or arising and then passing away. The particular function of that particular sense one can recognize. Say for example, you are keeping your you are simply being mindful about what you hear, and immediately a sound happens. That moment only the listening task happen. So we can say the ear arise at that moment, but that particular sound quickly disappear, and then that function of hearing or listening simply disappear, stop. So listening task has just happened, arisen, and then pass away. Similarly, the sound also just happened and then passed away. If there is any desire with respect to that sound, then that also probably you may be able to understand, and probably it also might pass away. So likewise, if we are operating at the sensory level, probably we can understand all that. So basically, understanding the senses, their operation, and how they are causing any kind of defilements to arise, it's a very rich area of practice, and that is also something causing to abandon all the defilements. So that's why Buddha say one can even become an arahant. Now the third one, that is called the mental volition. So we like to do things. We can't simply sit quiet. Even though the vipassana sometimes ask us to completely be quiet, just be, it's very, very difficult. Because we are motivated to do things, motivated to do various bodily activities. We want to talk, we want to discuss, we want to teach, or we want to, say, preach. Every time we want to talk with someone, a kind of a motivation is there to communicate. And again, we want to think. So intentional thinking is also there. So basically these intentions are quite prominent in us. So intentionally we act either with the body, speech or mind. So intentional participation into activities. It's a very, very active way of how we are living. And we may feel like we are living when we are actively participating like that. When we are intentionally doing something, then we feel that I am living, I am important, my presence is very well known. So that is there. So basically, such presence of I, presence of a person, an individual, is very well highlighted when we are engaged with various activities. That's why people prefer to involve with so many activities. Sometimes they can't even bear that much of load, but still they want to occupy their mind with so much of responsibilities, so much of activities. They don't know how to rest. They don't know how to take a break, to give some vacation to the mind. So they always want to occupy the mind with lot of responsibility, lot of activities. They are always busy. Now, mental volition is something driving here. So we are taking kind of a food through engaging various activities, volitional activities. That's why it's a kind of motivating us, it's a kind of motivating our ego, our presence, our importance, by engaging with a lot of activities. And once we conducted an activity, then we can even look it back and then say, okay, I am the one who did it, further motivate ourselves, further increase the sense of I, the self-view, all that is possible. So kammaramo hoti. So this is sometimes explained as a kammaramo hoti. So we have a kind of addiction to engage with a lot of activities. Now, Buddha explains this from another angle. So he says, okay, assume there is a charcoal pit, which is deeper than a man's height, filled with glowing coals without flame or smoke. So you can't see a flame, you can't see a smoke. But that wise person knows this is very, very dangerous. In case if I being fallen to it, I might even die. Because so much of coal is there, glowing coals is there. And even though there is no flame or smoke, they are burning. They start burning my body, I might get killed. But here Buddha giving a picture, yeah, that particular man who want to live, who doesn't want to get into any trouble, being pulled by two strong men towards that charcoal pit. Now he says, this man knows that I am going to die, these two people are carrying me towards that direction, and his will and his desire, all that is trying to pull away from that. Why? Because he knows I will fall into this charcoal pit, and on that account I will meet death or deadly suffering. It is such a way, because that I say the nutriment mental volition should be seen. So we can look at from that angle. So sometimes we have to engage with a lot of activities. But we know, it may be difficult to engage with. Maybe certain activities are tiresome and certain things we don't want to get engaged with. But unfortunately, we have to do just to run the family. So those are also there. Probably people are engaging with various occupations just to run their family. But internally, they don't enjoy it. They don't enjoy the work. But every day they have to go to that work, start working, sometimes get blamed, sometimes punished. All that is there. Similarly, they might have to speak, and kind of certain thoughts are going on. They want to stop, but the mind doesn't want to stop. Kind of a worrying is going on with respect to some past event happened. They know, okay, there's no point of thinking like this. It's harmful. It can even take me to depression, but the mind does not stop. So likewise, there are instances that people understand, okay, this way of operation is harmful. This way of bodily conduct is harmful. This way of speech is harmful. This way of thinking is harmful, but still they can't prevent it, stop it. As a result of kind of a momentum, it is keep going. So unfortunately, the certain karma being accumulated. So we have to pay for that. So this mental volition, even though it's giving some sort of satisfaction, a promotion of a person, so it has a great impact. So we are continuously accumulating some karma. So therefore, looking at from that angle actually help us to step back and see the situation rather than impulsively operate, quickly react. So one can see the situation. Is it really necessary for me to participate in a particular event, in a particular action? Is it essential for me to put my words? Is it essential for me to speech? Or is it essential for me to think? So can we have some control over our bodily actions, verbal actions or mental actions, mental thinking? So if we are able to have that kind of a attitude, that kind of a control, then we can see we are only doing the necessary, correct, wholesome kind of activities. So Buddha say, if we are able to understand the volition, the three kinds of craving are fully understood. The three kinds of craving, the sensual desire, the kama tanha, the desire to become, the bhava tanha, and desire to get rid of, the vibhava tanha. The three categories of craving can be very well known if one is able to know their volitional activities. So because the volitional activities are driven by desires, so there's a desire. Whenever we see a situation, there's a desire arising. Accordingly, we react. Accordingly, we intentionally have something. So basically, it's a kind of a cittanupassana, dhammanupassana. So how to look at the mind? So what is the impulse we have? What is the causing kind of a tendency we have in our mind to operating in such a way? To operate in through the body in such a way, what is the internal motivation? What is the desire? So if we are able to understand the desires in all aspects, so Buddha said, you become an arahant. It's so powerful. Actually, this volitional activities, the full understanding of that, looking at the nutriment, volitional, this mental volition, mano sanchetana ahara, is also so powerful. And the last one is even powerful and even subtle, by the way. Now, the nutriment, edible food, is quite easy to understand. Kabalinkara ahara, easy to understand. Then passa ahara, the contact, we understood, but with some effort. And then mano sanchetana ahara, that also we can understand. But the last one is even difficult to understand, that is the nutriment consciousness. So how to look at that? So basically the consciousness is always tangled with name and form. Probably we discussed this when we were discussing the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, where we discussed how this conditioned consciousness causes suffering. We discussed to some extent some operation about the consciousness. Now, the main task of consciousness is to distinctly recognize. Suppose there are many people, and among that many people, how you are recognizing your, say, child, how you are recognizing your wife, how you are recognizing your husband. So likewise, when a group of people are there, you can distinctly pay attention to a particular object and recognize. So this is a function of consciousness. So this distinct knowing part, the cognition part. Suppose that you are taking food, so many different tastes are there, and while you are taking food, many different tastes are there, and you can distinctly know, okay, this is the bitter taste, this is the sweet taste, this is a pungent taste. So likewise, you can distinctly know different taste. This is the function of consciousness. So you are able to distinctly know. But we are doing it again and again. Through the eyes, we are seeing, and the eye consciousness constantly arise. Through the ear, we are listening, and ear consciousness arise. Through the nose, we are smelling, and the nose consciousness arise. Through the tongue, we are tasting, the tongue consciousness arise. From the body, we are going through some sensation, the body consciousness arise. And various mental objects appear in the mind, we cognize that, know that, the mind consciousness arise. So the consciousness constantly arise from the, say, throughout the day. And we even prefer that, we want to trigger the mind. We don't want to keep the mind peaceful, but we want to excite the mind. Kind of excitement is something that we prefer. So that's why people like to see horror movies. That's why people like to see some exciting movies, which are with a lot of gunfights, rapes, and etc. So very kind of extreme excitement. So we like it. We want it. We are using that to feed ourselves. So kind of a taking of food. So triggering the mind, exciting the mind, exciting the consciousness. We always want to establish our consciousness somewhere and keep triggering it, keep exciting it, keep exciting it. Now Buddha gives us very interesting simile here also. He says, assume that there is a criminal, a bandit, and he being caught by the soldiers, and he is being taken to the king, and they are saying, this man is a bandit, a criminal, impose on him whatever punishment you wish. And then the king says, go men, in the morning, strike this man with 100 spears. So using a very sharp spear, so 100 spears being hit to this man. And later they report at noon they have done that. And then man is, this king is asking, how is that man? Is he still alive? And they simply report, yes, he is still alive. And then the king order, okay, you need to hit him another 100 spears. And they report at in the evening. Again, the king is asking, is that man still alive? Yes, he's still alive. Okay, put him into another 100 spears. And now Buddha is asking from a question from the monks, what do you think, bhikkhus? Would that man being struck with 300 spears experience pain and displeasure on that account? Then the monks are answering, Venerable Sir, even if he were struck with one spear, he would experience pain and displeasure on that account, not to speak of 300 spears. Now, accordingly, Buddha say, in this way, because I say the nutriment consciousness should be seen. So it's a kind of a excitement to the mind. So whenever we are taking different objects to the mind again and again, and we are using even our senses to trigger the mind, a kind of an excitement, a triggering, a kind of a spear to the mind actually. We can't understand it, we can't see it because we are used to it. But when you are maybe in a concentrated state, say for example, you are practicing jhana, you are in first jhana, say very peaceful, very beautiful, really blissful, immediately a sound happens. You become really struck by that. You become really excited by that because it's not really an excitement. We can say a real fearful trigger has happened because you are in a very calm, very peaceful, very tranquil state. Immediately a sound happened. You feel astonished. So there you can see the peaceful mind. For a peaceful mind, so this triggering, this exciting is really a burden. Really a kind of a spear. But unfortunately, we are constantly doing that. We are constantly want to spear the mind. We constantly want to excite the mind, trigger the mind. But as we are continuing the practice, there are situations that you may get into some concentrated state, calm state, peaceful state. There you may understand even a thought is really a burden to the mind. Not the sound, smells, taste, tangibles, even a thought is really a burden to the mind. You can keep the mind even free from thoughts, free from thinking, utterly peaceful. Say you are going through vipassana practice, there also you are able to maintain the mind entirely free from any sense stimuli, completely free, completely unassociated, not grasping anything at all. There you may experience complete calmness, complete peacefulness. Then only you may understand, okay, what a kind of a torture which we are going through by operating through the senses, always exciting the mind without maintaining it in this unestablished level. So therefore, Buddha say, if one is able to understand the nutriment consciousness, he is able to understand the name and form. Because name and form is always there for the consciousness to get tangled. It's getting entangled with the name and form. But if you are able to avoid name and form, completely prevent name and form, then the mind becomes entirely free, entirely kind of transparent. Nothing is there to trigger, no kind of garbage, no kind of any signs available in the mind. It's complete purity is there, a clarity is there. There you may understand, okay, this is peaceful, this is sublime, this is equanimous, no friction. So this is how actually Buddha explains with various similes the nutriments in this Puttamansupama Sutta. And basically, Venerable Sariputta summarized, if one knows the origin of nutriment, the cessation of nutriment, and the way leading to the cessation of nutriment, He entirely abandons the underlying tendency to greed, abolishes the underlying tendency to aversion. He extirpates the underlying tendency to the view and conceit I am, and by abandoning ignorance and arousing true knowledge, he here and now makes an end of suffering. So basically, so it's a very powerful statement. So sabbaso raganusayam pahaya patiganusayam pativinodetva asmiti dittimananusayam samuhanitva avijjam pahaya vijjam upadetva ditteva dhamme dukkassanta karo hoti ettavatapiko avaso ariya savako samma ditti hoti ujugatasa ditti dhamme avacchappasadena samannagato agato iman saddhammanti. So very very powerful statement, telling that he is with endowed with the right view, and he is able to abandon the greed, the tendency to the greed, underlying tendency to aversion, underlying tendency to the wrong view, that is the asmimana. So all that ignorance he is able to abandon. So basically, and he is able to overcome suffering. He experienced the end of suffering. And he is the person who has with right view, and whose right view is straight, and he has unwavering confidence in the Dhamma, and has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, with that I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for discussion.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah, you have a question?
Yeah.
Bhante, can you show the last paragraph of the sutta?
Sure,
again?
Yeah.
Yes, Bhante. I was reading, I was reading Analio Bhikkhu's comparative study of this sutta with the Chinese parallels. There's two Chinese parallels, and I believe one Sanskrit fragment. Mm. And he said in the Chinese, both of the Chinese parallels, that this sutta was instigated by Shariputta going to a certain monk, I don't recall the name, but the Chinese parallels have it that Shariputta went to the monk, and then another parallel says that monk came to Shariputta.
Mm-hmm.
And the question that instigated this sutta was about right view, as attained by a stream enterer.
Mm-hmm.
So what in this last paragraph of the where it says, when a noble disciple has thus understood nutriment, the origin of nutriment, the cessation of nutriment, the way leading to the cessation of nutriment, he entirely abandons the underlying tendency to greed, he abolishes the underlying tendency to aversion, he extirpates the underlying tendency to the view and conceit I am, and by abandoning ignorance and arousing true knowledge, he here and now makes an end to suffering.
Hmm.
He says that part right there is talking about arahantship, totally abandoning these.
Yeah.
So, and then the following line, it says, in that way too, a noble disciple is one of right view, whose view is straight, who has unwavering confidence in the Dhamma and has arrived at this true Dhamma.
Mm-hmm.
That part, he says, is a classic description of Sotapanna. So he thinks from his studies that this part about the Arahant may have been mistakenly put in there.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Pali commentaries show some evidence that they were questioning this part.
Mm.
Why would they have the part about an arahant when this whole sutta is actually talking about stream entry,
mm-hmm.
right view.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what you think. It's a little bit off the, it's almost not really important for us, but in a way it may be somewhat.
Mm-hmm. So I think
helpful.
Now, So the kind of a provision is given, okay, at least for the stream enterer. So this kind of a basis is necessary. But I feel even when one is continuing one's life as a noble, as a seeker, so it may lead towards the arahantship. So we can't, what I understand now, if we consider, say, Mahachattarisaka Sutta, in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, so Buddha divides samadhitti into two groups. One is the mundane samadhitti and the other one is the supramundane samadhitti. So there he actually does not specify samadhitti as a fixed factor. Rather, he says a samadhitti is kind of an evolving factor. It's an evolving factor. So let me try to see the sutta, Mahachattarisaka. So so in that evolving factor, he starts with panya, then panya indriyan, panya balang, Majjhima Nikaya Uparipannasaka Anupada Vagga. Let me see whether we can see it. Majjhima Nikaya Uparipannasaka Anupada Vagga Mahachattarisaka. Mahachattarisaka. Okay, here Samadhitting Dwayam Vadami. Let me see. Kusalanchana Mahachattarisaka. Sammaditti pubbangama hoti kasan vikka sammaditti pubbangama hoti micchaditti. Okay, so let me share the screen so that you all can see. So this is the Mahachattarisaka Sutra I am showing. Here Buddha mentioned tata bhikkhave sammaditti pubbangama hoti katancha bhikkhave sammaditti pubbangama hoti Micchā jīvaṁ micchā ājīvoti pajānāti. So likewise he is explaining. Now here actually sammā ājīva, we are sammāditti. Sammāditti ariyā anāsavā lokuttara sammaṅgha. Okay, here. Katañca bhikkhave sammāditti ariyā anāsavā lokuttara maggaṅgha. This one I am talking. Yākho bhikkhave ariya cittassa anāsava cittassa ariya magga samangino ariya maggam bhāvayato paññā paññindriyam paññā balaṁ dhamma vicaya sabbhoñjakko sammā ditti maggaṅga ayaṁ ucchati bhikkhave sammā ditti ariya anāsava lokuttara maggaṅga. So basically he defines as a series, as a range of sammā ditti. So whatever the correct view, right view arising in the noble's mind, yeah, bhikkhave ariya cittassa anasava cittassa ariya magga samangino ariya maggam bhavayato. Now that person is now further developing the magga, he is further developing the path, and he is in line with the noble path. In his mind, in that noble person's mind, that the seka puggala's mind, okay, now the sammāditti is arising. In what form? It may be at the paññā level, it may be at the paññā indriya level, then it may be in the paññā bala level, it may be at the dhamma vicaya sambojjhanga level, or it may be at the sammāditti maggaṅga level. That's very broad. So he may be starting with kind of a penetrative wisdom. He may start looking at maybe his own mind, different defilements, maybe different nivaranas, maybe how they are coming, how they are existing, how they are passing away to some level. And then he may lead into the panyindriya, the faculty of wisdom. At some days, okay, my mind is very penetrative. Okay, I can see through. I can look at certain situation very deeply. So kind of the wisdom become a kind of a dominant factor in the mind. Then the panya bala, where he has confidence about his understanding. So his own understanding is so powerful. So he has a lot of confidence on his own understanding of the Dhamma, about his realization, kind of a panya bala. Then Dhamma vicaya sambojjhanga, where he's entirely inclined towards the realization now, not using the mind or not using the wisdom into other mundane purposes, but rather he is more concerned about the realization attaining Nibbana. So into that direction now he is motivated, inlined, and now the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga is going.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Samadhitti Magganga, so we are as a path factor, so he is further and further using the right view to abandon the wrong view and to establish in the right view. So therefore I feel even in the Seka Puggala, it is not that that the right view is something fixed. So right view is something, as Buddha explained here in the Mahachattarika Sutta, he is using a kind of broad dynamic sense is given to the Samadhitti.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, this is what I feel we can consider that. Hmm?
Yeah. Thank
so
you.
I'll check this one also, the comparative explanation
yes.
given by Venerable Ananda. We'll see
yeah,
that
the
also. I didn't.
Majjhima
Nikaya.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll go through that also. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. But that's good to at least to note that that right view has many levels
exactly.
and different facets of
exactly
how it may arise.
Yeah. So therefore, if we simply say that Venerable Sariputta is saying this Sammaditti Sutta, explaining only for the Seka Puggala, I feel it's, I don't know, maybe definitely helpful to arrive Sammaditti in all these possibilities.
Yeah.
And once he is there, he is further and further developing. So, is this Sammaditti Sutta explained in Majjhima Nikaya only aimed for a stream winner? We need to look into that.
Yes.
We'll see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Venerable Nalio makes quite an argument that this sutta is just for stream entry.
Stream entry. Okay.
So,
we'll see.
That's
we'll
interesting.
See.
Thank
we'll see.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you,
yeah.
Thank you. Any more questions on your side, Bhante?
No, that's all. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
In case we have new friends that's joining us, in this Q&A portion, feel free to raise your hand or send via the chat any questions that you may have. We will prioritize those questions relating to the sutta. But if you do have questions relating to your meditation practice, you may also ask those as well at towards the end of the Q&A session. All right. Kishan, you are invited to ask your question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thunrat Saranai Swami, no answer.
Yeah.
I think about this sutra talk, there was one section that I have re-listened. And today it just hits me about this, the mother and the father who is trying to cross this desert comes
mm-hmm.
to the center and consuming their own child.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way for us to sort of, consider the food,
mm-hmm.
because this is about the Kabilinkara, which is the normal day-to-day food that we consume. Of course, how we usually sort of have a certain type of interest. We want to cook this, that, the other, and to make it more tasteful and excessively. But the whole goal, what I understood today, is just use the food in order to cross that desert.
Yeah.
Not to indulge in that. And so these kind of things, how many times that you listen, I guess, like peel of an onion, you get a different sense of why we sort of not to indulge so much, but just keep that body, keep that food, in order for us to sort of cross that desert, which means, use this body in order to get to the Nibbana. Is that the right understanding?
Yeah, we can say so, because, so the point is that we often create some sort of a suffering, or rather a greed, or some other defilements as we are taking the food.
Mm.
And on the other hand, nowadays, people are not mindful at all while they are taking food. So they may be watching a TV, maybe operating their handphone, talking with others. So likewise, I mean, what they are eating is not yet given enough attention. So while maintaining mindfulness, if we are eating, so then mindful eating is something that we need to encourage. And then only actually we can do all this. So you can't look at your mind, what are the defilements arising as a result of partaking food, if we don't have mindfulness. So in a way, so we have to be mindful while we are eating and what we are eating. And if we don't have any idea what we are eating, then we may exceed the limit, or we overeat, or sometimes we eat something not suitable to us, against our maybe existing disease or something. So that is also there. And on the other hand, we have to be mindful about the eating process, then we are not being distracted. So that is also there. And again, then you can look at your mind and see what are the defilements arising because of this eating part. Am I comparing my lunch or something with someone else's lunch, what their food? So am I become somewhat greedy about what I am eating, or I have any kind of irritation of what I am eating? So likewise, we can look at the situation more mindfully, then only all these benefits would be able to take. And there also Buddha emphasized, okay, I have a kind of an attitude, why am I eating this food? So what is the purpose? So that is the reflection. So that reflection help us to, you know, kind of remove all the defilements and to well ground ourselves. Okay, I'm eating this food for this purpose. This body requires it. This is not kind of an enjoyment or adornment or something like that, but just this is a kind of a maintaining this food through the body. It's a kind of a medicine for the body. So if we are able to look at from that angle, then I think it's a very mature way of looking at this situation, rather than going for a kind of an enjoyment.
Yes. Thank you, Vante.
Yeah. Theruvan Sannai. And Niranjan wants to share this information, what I have sent you to the chat. So basically, till Bhante Dhammajiva returns, we have shifted Nisarnavanaya Tuesday English Dhamma discussion to the Thursday. But anyway, tomorrow it won't be able to conduct because of the Uposatha. Anyway, from next Thursday onwards, it's there from 7:30 to 8:30. So the same link what we are using today is the same link we'll be using on Thursdays as well. Another Dhamma discussion in English.
So for those that live in the US, this would translate to, if it's Thursday in Sri Lanka, it'll be Wednesday.
Correct.
At 9:30.
Correct.
Or actually 10 o'clock.
Uh-huh. I see.
Here, Eastern Standard Time.
Uh-huh. Because when Bhante Dhammajiva is here, then we were conducting it on Tuesdays 8:30. That's more night to you, but now maybe little earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. 1 hour earlier okay. Now. Okay. So are there any more questions, or else we'll wind up the session?
There's two that were sent through the chat. One says, Bhante, could you please suggest a reference for Maranupassana meditation, please.
Maranusati. Uh-huh. How to practice it? That detail I couldn't find in a, you know.
I know actually. On YouTube, there's Analio Bhikkhu gives a guided meditation on Maranusati.
Uh-huh.
Yes, death on dying death.
Uh-huh.
Yes, if you use that Pali word.
Maranusati.
Yes, it's for contemplating your death, right?
Correct.
He gives a very nice guided meditation on that. It's really, I think it's really wonderful. So, yeah.
Okay, Venerable Dhamma Vijita suggest to explore YouTube. In there, Venerable Analio conducts a very good guided meditation on Maranusati. Probably you can search the YouTube. Probably it may be available.
Yeah.
So maybe with respect to one of his books, maybe because maybe Satipatthana, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could also find it in his book Satipatthana. I mean, but it's not the it's he gives this
separate.
Kind of meditation is not
separate
in
one.
That book.
Ah.
No.
Uh-huh.
But
great, thank you. And Yasala, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante, for the Dhamma talk today. In the four type of foods, in the last one you mentioned about more like our mind is searching, is like going for the sensual pleasures. I just wanted to clarify, Bhante, when we do some meditation, let's say if we are in a state where our consciousness is like with animitta or not thinking anything, so in that situation, is it right to think that we are kind of free of this?
Correct.
The fourth ahara?
Yes,
yeah.
We can say so, because where the name and form is absent and the mind is not entangled, mind is not tangled or stuck in the name and form, what happens with the mind is that we have some object, we have some cluttered mind where some objects are then the consciousness get tangled. But when we are into animitta, the signless state, no signs at all, so the mind is in complete clarity, very much like transparent, or very much like a kind of a blank paper, nothing is written. So the complete transparency is there, lucidity is there, but nothing an object as such. So no food at all, but the table is open. Only the table is there, but no food. Something like that.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, Theravada Sanai. Jennifer, back to you.
Oh, sorry, I was on mute, Bhante. There is one more written question. It says, does karma have an influence on nutriments?
Karma have an influence on nutriments? Yeah, we can say so also. Now say, for example, if you have bad karma and accordingly you couldn't get enough food today. I mean, such instance also, and you are not being gifted. Now say you had a lot of bad karma and you haven't done enough, you haven't been generous in the past life, and then today, this life, you're not getting enough food or not getting enough whatever you need. So the karma certainly has an impact on how we are operating. So we can say, so we can admit, yes, some impact is there.
I believe that's all of the questions for today.
Okay, fine. So then we have spent some time in discussing Dhamma as well as listening to the Buddha's teaching, and we are trying our best to sort of align our understanding with the Sammāditti, the correct view, right view, and all that help us to accumulate some merits. We'll share these merits with all the celestial beings and all past relatives and whoever in need of merits, and we wish these merits help us also understand Buddha's teaching, practices to the best of our ability, attain path, fruition, nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sambhe deva anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sambhe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sambhe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhiyā. Ākāsatthā ca bhummattā devā nāgā mahiddhikā puñyantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu sāsanaṁ. Ākāsatthā ca bhummattā devā nāgā mahiddhikā
puñyantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu desanaṁ.
Akasakta jabumakta devanaga mahidika punyang tangana moditva jarang rakantumang param idam vonati nang hotu sukita huntunateo idam vonati nang hotu sukita huntunateo idam vonati nang hotu sukita huntunateo imina punyakammena mame balasamagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya Imina punyakammena mame balasamagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya Imina punyakammena mame balasamagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bante. Terwan Sanai.
Yeah, Terwan Sanai.